From the Schmoes No Network Studios in Los Angeles, California, it's time for Meet the Movie Press. And now, here's your host, the editor-in-chief of SchmoesNo.com, Mark Riley, and from The Wrap, Jeff Snyder.
All right, hello, Schmoeville. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Movie Press. I am Mark Riley, editor-in-chief of SchmoesNo.com, and as always, Jeff Snyder. Yep. Hey, buddy.
Are we taping this?
We're up. And it's your call time. What's up?
The Force Awakens.
Oh!
Woo! Morning, Schmoeville.
That's right. Snyder. Woo-hoo. With the haymaker.
It's a late night last night, gang. One of those Hollywood nights.
That's right.
I'm going to stop singing. We'll never do that again.
Yeah. No, I liked it. You have a melodic voice. It's beautiful.
I can get up there.
Yeah, you can. And, of course, that was our little nod to the big Star Wars news that broke.
Dun-dun-dun!
We will talk about that because we have a great show. We're going to talk a little bit about Star Wars, of course, but we are going to focus a little bit because it's getting to be that time of year, folks. Award season's coming.
Oh, I'm so excited. We're in the thick of it already. It's already started. Snuck up on you.
Yep, the movies are out there. The buzz is out there. And we have a great guest coming in from one of the best websites out there, Vulture.com. We have senior editor Kyle Buchanan joining us. Do we want to just get right to it and bring him in? Or should we just, like, wait and just make him sweat?
Yeah, no, let's do it.
Okay. So, everyone, I want you to give a big Schmoeville welcome. You can find him on Twitter, at Kyle Buchanan. And he is senior editor at Vulture.com. Kyle, welcome to Meet the Movie Press.
Woo!
Get those cans on, Kyle.
Yeah, it's going wild right now.
Yeah, we have a whole applause section. It's like The Price is Right. Wait in line. They have the little name tags, and they come in, and they give you applause, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Kyle, welcome to the show. Meet the Movie Press.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's so great to have you, because as I was saying, Vulture.com, God, one of the best websites out there. You write for it. I follow you.
I
source you all the time on SchmoesNo.com.
Thank
so.
You.
How did you get started over there at Vulture?
Oh gosh, I mean it's been a whole journey. I actually started in music journalism, funny
really?
Enough. I was reviewing CDs and interviewing bands for Flaunt magazine. That was my first magazine gig.
Cool.
I actually recommend that only in the sense that it made me a really great interviewer, I think, or well,
yeah.
as good as I can be at it, I think it was all home there. Cuz bands are awesome people to interview. People, musicians, people in bands. It tends to be a lot more loose than,
yeah.
The message isn't as controlled.
Yeah. In my experience, a lot of the times when you're dealing with actors, there's things you're supposed to say, there's things you're not allowed to talk about, there's often a publicist that's around or in the room even when you're talking to them. It ain't like that with bands, you know?
Yeah.
Bands are a lot more usually hungover, a lot more willing to sort of venture a candid opinion. And they, you know, they write their own shit. Like,
yeah.
They write their songs and they definitely have a point of view. Actors, it's not always that way. Actors
sure.
sometimes, you know,
right.
they read
handlers.
Lines.
They're like, yeah, we show up and read
So the they lines. Might have a lot of personality, you know, on screen, but they might not have very much to say off screen. So it was good training.
Was it like Almost Famous at all? Because that's how I'm picturing it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the heyday of magazine journalism where you could spend months with someone
right.
or even weeks or even a full day with somebody. And, you know, I still do interview musicians from time to time, but it's not typically like that. But
mm-hmm.
Musicians are awesome. And so it just taught me that the more freewheeling an interview can be, the more it just feels like a conversation, the better. I mean, I treat every interview I do like I'm at a really cool house party. I'm in line for the bathroom. I just met somebody who's in line ahead of me, and we're just exchanging small talk. And then he told me he has this awesome job. And I'm like, genuinely curious. We've had a few drinks, so let's talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, that's that.
And then he has to pee.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the has to pee part actually comes into it if they're saying you've got 15 minutes.
Right.
You
right.
know?
Exactly.
So you're like, okay, how much can I get into this conversation with the knowledge that at some point he's going to leave and go to the bathroom?
Okay, so you started in music journalism at
yeah.
Flaunt, and then how'd you get into movie journalism? When did you sort of start writing about Hollywood?
Then I met this guy, Corey Sholobo, who'd gone to USC with me, and he knew that I'd majored in film and was also
wow.
on the school
you
paper.
Went to USC.
I did.
Fellow Trojan
yeah,
here, buddy.
Fight on.
Fight on. All right.
Screw you guys.
I like it. What are you, UCLA over there?
NYU.
He'd read some of my stuff and said, you know, this is all great, but why are you not writing about movies since that's what you went to school for?
Yeah.
And so he kicked me a few freelance reviews for The Advocate, and then I steadily built myself up to be the chief film critic there.
Nice.
And so I had that job for a while, and then there was sort of a writing on the wall moment where a lot of critics were getting fired and job security was not great. The Advocate's ad sales had kind of gone down, so I thought, okay, I've got to jump somewhere.
Yeah.
And I jumped to Defamer.
Wow.
The late lamented, although occasionally revived in a Frankensteinian fashion, Defamer.
I love Defamer, and you did a great job over there. Well, so tell me what that was like working for Nick, and I mean, I imagine it's crazy.
Well, yeah, I wonder if everybody at home sort of knows what Defamer
is.
Yeah,
lay it out for us.
You know, it used to have this great reputation. Defamer, way back in the day when Mark Lasanti was the editor, was this very sort of inside Hollywood but bemused kind of accessible tone about what was going on. It was Gawker when Gawker was really just more about New York media. Defamer was intended to be like the West Coast version. So they would talk about Hollywood, but they'd also talk about, you know, parking spaces at CAA and like sort of make those things funny and accessible. And I think that as that site grew and as Perez Hilton sort of concurrently grew, Nick Denton, who was running Defamer, who always has, it's his title, Gawker at Gawker Media, he thought, okay, let's get in on this Perez Hilton action and make it sort of, you know, more about, like, bitchy shit about celebrities.
Yeah.
Right, it got a little bit meaner.
It got a lot meaner, actually. The tone, you know, when you hear the title Defamer, you might think, okay, this is going to be, like, a really mean, snarky site. And it kind of wasn't under Mark. Mark is really smart, very funny, and has this very sort of dry
I think he's great, and I read his stuff all the time over at Grantland.
Yeah, I aspire to write like Mark. I always think, how would Mark write this?
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But anyway, so it was like sort of like a mean, sour moment for Defamer. And honestly, I think the site was sort of on its way out or recalibrating when they brought me on.
Kind of grew into its name, didn't it?
Yeah, it had. And then I think when I came on, they were sort of trying to get back to their roots. Seth Abramovich, Stu Van Arsdale, Molly McAleer, Julie Miller.
Crew.
It really was. There were a lot of great people working there at the time who've gone on to great things. And then there's me. And so I think I worked there for about 8 months, maybe. Yeah, thereabouts. And then they shuttered it, you know, because at the time in Gawker Media, IO9 had launched, and that was proving a lot more successful. And frankly, I think Nick was more of a, like, I'll watch Battlestar Galactica guy and I won't see any movies kind of guy. Ha. So it was just his passion was there. And Defamer, you know, the brand was a little bit dented, I think.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
And so they shuttered it, and all of us really hopped over to Movie Line, which was being revived.
Oh, right.
Which was a great time. You know, Movie Line, again, is dormant now. There were about 3 or 4 years, again, an all-star team, including people like Mike Ryan were on that staff.
Was Jen there, too, at the time?
Jen Yamato, yeah. Yeah, a lot of terrific people who are writing all over the place. Probably some that you've even had on the show. Elvis Mitchell, Stephanie Zacharyk. They were our film critics. I mean, come on. So it no longer really exists because that was owned by Penske, you know, talking about tycoons who all own all these media brands.
Yeah, right.
And if it's getting too dry, let me know. He bought Nikki Fink and Deadline. And when that happened, it was like, Stu saw the writing on the wall in that case and said, okay, if you're running a competing movie site, how's this even going to work?
Right, you kind of became the redheaded stepchild in
a
sense.
Yeah, well, you know, as Nikki probably felt when Penske acquired Variety. Like, what's the point of, you know, owning two things that are sort of competing for the same space and eyeballs and attention? So we sort of started, it was hard to catch fire when you had this, like, flaming hot sibling, you know? And but I think we did a lot of great work there. There were so many good writers. And we kind of, I mean, I don't want to take too much credit for this, but I think we sort of established the format that Vulture has taken and run with. The notion that you can have, like, a unique interview every day or more than one. That was something, us coming from magazines, we knew all those publicists could get them.
Yeah.
At the time, and this is still true of so many sites, most sites were just basic news aggregation.
Yeah.
And we were like, no, the real attention is in writing long features, mm-hmm. having reviews, and having interviews and exclusive content.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's something that honestly I think everybody has either simultaneously realized or, you know, respected what we were doing, if even if it wasn't, you know, this gigantic brand that sustained itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then off of that, got hired at Vulture. And
there
I've been there now for over 4 years.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. Impressive.
Yeah, well, like I said.
Update my Wikipedia.
There you go. Yeah, like I said, I go to Vulture all the time. I love it. I've been following your tweets and everything. And Kyle, I want to bring this around because, you know, we had something big that dropped in the Star Wars world yesterday.
Yes.
And it's going to wrap it around to this hopeful news break that we do here. Oh, yes. Kyle, every week we drop a hopeful news break on the Meet the Movie Press fan page on the Schmoes Know Network on Facebook. And a lot of people were happy about they were wanting the Star Wars title. Okay? So as you all know, it's The Force Awakens, which we can talk about in a little bit. But Josh Lott, one of our big commenters over there on Facebook, he wants to know when we can see the Star Wars teaser, which we're kind of hearing rumblings about. So I want to throw it out to you guys. First, what do you think of this Star Wars title? And do you think we're going to get a trailer anytime soon? This year, maybe? In the next month or so?
I thought the title was fine, which was actually the surprising part, because I still distinctly remember when Phantom Menace Attack of the Clones, both those titles broke.
Me too.
The thing I remember the most is I had the same roommate for both of them, this guy Andrew, and I remember the sour lemon face he made when I told him both of those titles. The first one, Phantom Menace, was this can't be real. It can't be this dorky of a title.
Yeah.
Then when I told him Attack of the Clones, it was one of those, oh no, we're really in for it if it's going to continue in this
fashion. Yeah, we were going down. By that time, it was like, Attack of the Clones, why not the Clone Wars?
And exactly, yeah. So for this one to be called The Force Awakens, it's like it's sort of a mild title in comparison. So your mileage may vary. Like maybe you realize now in retrospect that you missed like the batshit buggery of like the George Lucas titles where it was totally out of step with what his audience wanted. Or maybe you're like, you know what, that's fine. I want it to just be like a normal title where, you know, my other friends won't make fun of me when I talk about it.
Yeah, well, I was mentioning it to Mark earlier. Did you see that apparently 2 years ago, someone called the title online?
Yeah.
Someone in some sort of fan forum or whatever.
This blew my mind.
And Mark raised the question, is this a George Lucas title?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't blow my mind because the title is so sort of normal that you could kind of guess it. Honestly, that was my first reaction when I saw the still. Mm-hmm. That has the logo and the title treatment. I was like, this is easily something a fan could make up and sort of intuit. Whereas the George Lucas titles were so out of the realm of what people would expect.
I know. I did the same kind of take on the Phantom Menace. I was driving and it was like such big news. It was like on the radios. It was like Rick Dees or something talking about it. I'm like, what the? And why was I listening to Kiss FM back then? But I kind of went, huh? What? What? Why? This one I'm okay with. Like right away, I was like, "Yeah,
sure,
yeah, I'm good with this."
I think we're all wondering.
I actually really like it. It makes sense for the new trilogy to kind of relaunch.
Well, you need a begins or a rises or something in
there.
Well,
that's what we talked about last night. We're like, thank God it's not like rises or begins.
It's akin to that though.
Awakens. Yeah.
It's not that dissimilar.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy with it, but we were kind of talking a little bit about the whole Star Wars stuff going on out there and how many leaks are out there. And you were bringing up some great points, Kyle. I want to kind of touch on that a little bit before we get to award season talk.
Yeah, it's craziness. I mean, J.J. Abrams is very famous for sort of his mystery box spoiler policy.
Yep.
He keeps everything incredibly under wraps.
Yep.
I mean, you look back at things like Super 8. You look back at what he attempted to do with Star Trek Into Darkness, which I think was folly, ultimately.
Oh, that was...
This notion that was bullshit.
Just tell us it's con and everybody can move on.
Well, also, I mean, people looking back on that movie, you know, as it ages, everyone will know it's con from the beginning. Because you'll revisit it and you'll say, this is the one where Benedict Cumberbatch played con.
Yeah.
So the notion that you're going to be watching it for an hour while this movie's trying desperately to fool you, and it's not going to have an afterlife that goes along with that narrative, is ridiculous to me.
My favorite story about that mystery box stuff with Into Darkness was I covered CinemaCon and they showed a clip of Khan and Chris Pine shooting through space. They
changed the name, right?
They changed the name.
Yeah.
So that all of us in there would, like, and I even reported and I went, oh, he's what, a Harrison. You know, that's what he's being called in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then going back to see it in the theaters, it was Khan. And that's the link. That was a month before release.
Now, listen, I totally respect the notion that you don't want everything spoiled. Keep secrets. It's fun. Sure. It's so fun, especially with guys like us who are so plugged in, mm-hmm. to be surprised by a movie. I'm into that notion. But I think that in the case of Star Wars, he had kept things secret for a while. There were casting rumors, but the day that they, you know, released that first table read photo, there were all these people who, I don't know, Jeff might know because he's so plugged into deal making. Yeah. But I didn't know that like, you know, Donald Gleason was in negotiations.
Oh, Dom, yeah.
Or even, I don't think, even Oscar Isaac I knew was in negotiations. Yeah. So that was a surprise, and then things went dark for a while,
yep.
and then Leaks.
Steady stream.
Steady stream of leaks, concept art, descriptions of the ending, descriptions of the big twist. It's startling.
That big twist one just blew my mind. And again, I will not ever say it out to any of my friends or to schmoesknow.com because that just spoils the entire movie. God, I hope it's not true.
So what I had heard on this one and why suddenly the mystery box had so many holes in it is that if you'll recall, production had to shut down when Harrison Ford injured himself.
Yes.
And there were a lot of independent contractors, I heard, who were out of work for that time and then maybe did not get picked up and had all this stuff lying around.
Interesting.
And just started doling it out. Hmm. Maybe a sort of a punitive thing. It might not have even been all that many people. It could just be, you know, one or two.
Yeah,
but there was a lot to go around, you know, between concept art and spoiling the twist.
That's really interesting. I didn't think about that break affecting things.
Yeah, that's what I had heard. Because also a lot of the concept art and whatnot was leaking on, sort of random low profile sites.
Yeah.
And I just. Indie Revolver.
Which had the watermarks. And I'm like, who are these guys? And why are we getting, you know, Stormtrooper helmets? And then there was more. Then there was that android looking guy.
So much.
And then
there's so much.
The making Star Wars. com, is that what it is? That was just dropping some major spoilers. I mean, James Gunn even went out on Twitter and went, "You should be ashamed of yourself."
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I look at Making Star Wars and I'm like, that's a fan site. Why are they ruining the movie?
Well, listen, it's the business we're in these days. I think that's unfortunate. I wouldn't want to ruin an ending. The same sort of thing happened with Avengers Age of Ultron. A lot of bloggers, a lot of writers had sort of, you know, known things about
everyone
has the script, and they were alluding to things, but then as soon as Drew McWeeny actually wrote about a major spoiler from the ending and the fate and how it might affect other movies, then it was kind of open season. Now we know so much about the ending.
I feel like I've already seen
it. We do if you actually want to dive into it. So, you know, respect to everybody who's stayed away from that. It's hard for me to do in my job because things, you know, just by osmosis, they leak all over the place. And you learn them.
Yeah, and I, you know, since we're kind of, Schmoes Know is kind of independently run by me and Christian Harloff, and we talk about these things, we decided as a service to our fans, we're not going to cover this.
No, that's good.
Did we take a hit on advertising and hits? Yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm such a huge fan. I don't want to know. But I understand the landscape and the business behind it.
Well, you know, we were comparing it before we started to the first Avengers, which actually they ran a pretty tight ship on.
They did.
You know, there were a lot of elements that had not leaked even before the first media screening.
Yeah.
We didn't know quite who the aliens were.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't know, by the way.
We didn't know about the tag to the movie. We didn't even know that Gwyneth Paltrow did a sort of an extended cameo in it until a Japanese trailer leaked her involvement. It was pretty amazing what they'd managed to keep secret there, and now that really the only way for Marvel to keep those secrets is to get far out in front, as they did at their, you know, recent presentation where they you know, started announcing things that I still must admit had been widely rumored for a long time.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But that felt surprising and shocking.
So. I love that they have to sell Avengers with Gwyneth Paltrow in Japan.
Yeah.
Like, we gotta get Gwyneth.
No, nobody cares about the Hulk or Thor. It's Gwyneth Paltrow. Sliding Door is just killed out there.
Should we segue to a couple of other news things before we jump into award season, which will be the second half of the show?
I definitely want to kind of talk about, Jeff, something I loved that you did yesterday was you had called Toy Story 4.
Oh.
You know, yeah. It said told you, which I love. but you had some good research behind it. You're like, well, Tim Allen is kind of roped in for
I wrote
this.
That story 4 years ago. It was one of the earliest stories I ever wrote at The Wrap. And yeah I had it on very good authority that there was, you know, it was in his contract, Toy Story 4. Like, those were the words.
Yeah, and that's one of the other big news breaks that happened yesterday, all Disney. And that's in, you know, Toy Story 4. And a lot of the fans out there went, why? We don't need this.
I'm with them, honestly. They wrapped it up fine.
I thought it was a beautiful ending to a beautiful trilogy.
I can't believe they're going back to that well.
And they are going back to the well, and I get it. And I can't believe Rashida Jones is going to be writing it.
I can't believe that.
That's
it's
insane.
It's very cool.
I think it's so cool.
I think the thing we're neglecting to realize is that those characters never went away for the Pixar Brain Trust. They kept putting them in shorts.
Right? Yeah.
They made TV specials. You know, we probably didn't see those, us three guys in the room. So.
I saw Toy Story of Terror.
Well, there you go.
I did see that. And I was wondering the whole time, is this the original voice cast? Because I know that there is a Woody voice that is voiced by Tom Hanks' brother.
Oh, I had no idea.
In the offshoots, you know what I mean? Like the toys and whatnot. So I was wondering if it's the same voice. And then I see that the whole cast is back. And I remember Toy Story of Terror. I'm like, they're going to do another one. There are so many of these coming out. And
I'll go see it. I mean, we love those characters. It's just, I was just surprised.
Yeah, so while
too.
We might think that the trilogy ended perfectly, those characters have never had sort of a clean end for Pixar. And it's, you know, natural for them to start thinking that way. And their sort of stated business goal going forward is to alternate between originals and sequels. And there's no bigger brand, honestly.
I thought it was interesting what Mark Harris said on Twitter yesterday, where it's just like, this was not why people fell in love with Pixar and the brand stuff and the sequels. It's just, I was a little disappointed when I saw that announcement.
When John Lasseter took over Disney Animation, it was at a time where they were doing, you know, Lion King 4 1/4. You know, they were putting out all these cash-in sequels that were sort of diminishing the brand.
Yeah.
I'll give Pixar this. I don't think their sequels are diminishing the brand. They're massive. They're important. Toy Story 3 was nominated for Best Picture.
Cars 2 is like a nader.
But like Cars 1 is not for us.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And, you know, I'm sure the inevitable Cars 3 won't be either.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't like that series, but that's another point.
If anybody's going to make sequels like The Incredibles 2, which Pixar's also working on, like, it might as well be them. I agree. I would like to see more originals. And they do have some promising-looking originals coming out.
Yeah, I can't
out,
wait for Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur.
Right.
But, yeah, we got Toy Story 4 now. We got Finding Dory. We got Incredibles 2. What else are we going to get?
I just hope they let Wall-E alone. I think that's such a perfect movie on its own. I really don't want to see that world revisited. That's my favorite Pixar film. Just let it be.
Yeah.
But you know,
that's your favorite Pixar
film? It really
is.
I don't know if we think like, you know, young moviegoers who are used to shared cinematic universes, who are used to going to the movies and expecting a serial TV-like experience, you know?
Yeah.
It's just different now, and shareholders expect that, too. That's the best way to make money.
Yeah, well, Toy Story 4, it is obvious. Ken Napzok, who does our news on the main show, is so funny. He's like, Pixar, making more money, you know? It's like, they're into printing money, and that is the business model, maybe not the business model, but that is what they're doing with this. However, for me, I said, do we need another Toy Story? No. Will I see it? Hell yes. Like, I love... They do them well. Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 are all brilliant movies, well-done movies, my opinion, of course.
You know, I wouldn't ascribe, like, so craven a motivation to Pixar as I'm about to suggest, because I don't think John Lasseter would do Toy Story 4 and direct it if he didn't really care about it. But it
I
should
agree.
Be noted that Pixar hasn't had a movie out in a year because they delayed The Good Dinosaur.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still trying to recoup some of the money that was spent on Brave, which was obviously a success, but cost a lot and was in development for a long time. So it's important to them to tell shareholders that they have a massive, massive movie coming out after these two originals.
I Interesting. Mean,
not that Finding Dory won't be massive as well, but it's just, you know, we have two originals and two massive sequels. I think that's sort of theory. Sets their investors at ease.
So I do want to talk about Fassbender and Steve Jobs and the Tarantino stuff, but let's save that maybe for the last 5 minutes. We need to get to award season.
Let's get to award season because I'm excited about this. And you brought up, we were going back and forth on email and on some of the ridiculous, I'm going to start first with some of the ridiculous, like, Best Picture rumor nominees. You brought up something interesting, Jeff.
There was a story recently about Captain America being an Oscar contender. Let me tell you right now, that's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Right? Am I right, Kyle?
I was surprised. Yeah. So Deadline, Pete Hammond, their awards guru, had written a long thing interviewing the Russo brothers about whether Captain America would be an awards contender. I think out of the two Marvel movies that came out this past year, first of all, not that either of them really has a shot, but Guardians of the Galaxy is a much better movie.
Much better movie.
You know, it's the franchise starter instead of a sequel, and people really embrace that. I had actually contacted Disney a whole lot over this past month saying, listen, do you guys have any sort of Oscar plans? And they didn't. Even when The Avengers came out and was gigantic, those publicists were like, really, Oscar, when I would ask about it? You know? So to see the Captain America thing, I was surprised. It's a very good movie.
It's a great movie, but I don't think... I mean, if The Dark Knight wasn't nominated, which I felt was a better movie, cinematically.
Well, listen, here's the case you can make, and I'd rather make this case for Guardians than Captain America, though I like both movies. You know, Dark Knight was when there weren't 10 nominees, 10 possible nominees.
Right.
Also, so you could have 10 nominees this year, and so many would-be Best Picture contenders have faltered that there's room for a big populist hit. I don't think it would be Captain America. Again, I think it would be Guardians of the Galaxy because everyone has such warm feelings about it. It really felt fresh in a way that's unusual. Mm-hmm. And it was, such a barnstorming hit.
Could it be like when Star Wars was nominated in 77?
Yeah, exactly.
Guardians is kind of in that vein, but...
Avatar District 9, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
I think of Avatar as... And that movie is far and away, worse than Captain America, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy. I did not like Avatar.
Captain America?
I loved Captain America. Yeah, I loved it. But I just don't think... That's a reach.
So Avatar almost won Best Picture.
Yeah.
It's the biggest movie of all time.
I know.
My head's still spinning by suggesting a Marvel movie is going to be in the Best Picture.
I don't
think it will happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
But I think... I would be excited. You know, we've talked about populist movies that have some sort of claim on a potential Best Picture slot. Let's not forget that when the field was expanded to 10, one of the potential nominees, you know, hovering around that 10th slot was Star Trek. There was a massive push for that.
That's true.
It was even nominated for the PGA. Star Trek. I believe Star Trek and The Town, if I'm not mistaken, were the two that were hovering around that last slot that I think we're all thinking probably went to Winter's Bone that year.
Mm-hmm.
But Star Trek almost got nominated for Best Picture. So if that could get nominated, Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think is a better movie, deserves to, I don't know, at least be thought about. And I think that the Guardians could get other nominations like a PGA. I think it could end up on... some year-end best.
I'd rather see Apes get a Best Picture nomination if we're doing a big blockbuster.
Absolutely. I think that deserves it more than Captain America or Guardians.
That's my opinion. I think Apes was really strong and, weirdly enough, hasn't quite had the sort of talked about afterlife that the first one did.
You're absolutely right.
It did satiate the fans. I think they loved it, and I think they can't wait for part three. But I think it didn't stick around. Yeah, it didn't stick around in the pop culture conversation.
Yeah.
It stuck around with Andy Serkis, but that's about it. And I would like to see that more too. But let's talk about the real ones.
Okay. So what do you think? I mean, right now, and I know it's early, and I don't want to hold you to this. What do you think wins?
I think it's between two movies. Two movies that are sort of the front runners by default.
Okay,
which is not to say that either of them are bad because they're not. It would be Boyhood, Richard Linklater's coming-of-age story told over 12 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And The Imitation Game with Benedict Cumberbatch playing the World War II codebreaker Alan Turing. Both of those movies have been sort of widely seen around Hollywood. Boyhood obviously came out earlier this year.
Yeah.
Imitation Game hasn't, but it's screened pretty extensively and has been at a lot of film festivals. And there's still some movies yet to see, but there's so little of what's coming out that I think could actually win Best Picture. I think it might just be down to Unbroken, which, to be fair, could easily win Best Picture. It's got the makings of it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even Selma, the Martin Luther King biopic, just because it has the, you know, the general sense of what Oscar goes for. But
sure.
I don't think it's going to be Into the Woods. And
No. I hope
and
not.
And honestly, there's just not that much left.
What about Birdman?
I think it is between Selma and Unbroken. I haven't seen either one, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
No, but it's interesting because you hear... I mean, we're all hearing the buzz.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody just says, like, oh, that's Oscar.
I know, you know, the Lou Zamperini story is Best Picture worthy.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And the talent that made that movie,
right, exactly.
Shooting at the Coen Brothers. Right.
Exactly. The crew that they surrounded Angelina with. I was very impressed with Jackson.
Well, wait. You said that in a kind of condescending way. I'm going to push back. The crew that they surrounded Angelina with.
Oh, okay.
That makes it sound like they're sort of propping her up. Angelina is, I mean, probably the fiercest one of all. I saw her first film in The Land of Blood and Honey, which had an okay script that she wrote and was very well directed, especially the sort of rare action breaks in that, which were extremely muscular.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to get propped up. I hear this a lot. So pushing back.
No, probably I like it. This is as good.
I'm pushing back on something that you didn't probably even intend, but I always hear this notion, especially with like first or second time female directors of, oh, but she didn't really direct that. It was her DP.
Right.
Oh, it wasn't really her. It was the producer. A lot. There's just this weird pernicious thing. I hear it all the time. Heard about Sofia Coppola when Virgin Suicides came out. Everyone said Spike Jonze directed that. When Miranda July did Me, You, and Everyone We Know, Miguel Arteta.
Don't tell me these things. I love Me, You, and Everyone We Know.
Well, no. What I'm saying is...
I know, you're defending.
They directed them.
Right.
I mean, you look back at Virgin Suicides, it was obviously her. It wasn't Spike Jonze, but this happens all the time. I heard about Kimberly Pierce with Boys Don't Cry. Everyone said, oh, it was the DP.
Oh,
they
boy.
Always do that to women in a way that never do to first-time
male directors. That's super interesting.
Directors.
I certainly was not suggesting that
I just directed Unbroken. You triggered a rant.
However, I do know that Steven Spielberg directed Poltergeist and not Toby Hooper.
Well, sure. No, absolutely. No, but the you said they surrounded Angelina Jolie with this crew, and I think it's more like when Angelina Jolie calls the Coen brothers, they're like, we'll take this gig for hire.
Sure.
You know, it's much more like that because
it's
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
A goddess on earth. You know?
Well, I do think it is between Unbroken and Selma, and I think if there is a spoiler, it's going to be Sniper. It's going to be American Sniper.
We'll see.
Which I've heard really good things about.
Clint Eastwood, right?
I mean,
he's kind of Oscar gold. I mean, well, aside from his... Has been Oscar gold.
With Boyhood and an Imitation Game, let me address those. So Boyhood, that has been obviously a very popular sentiment that it could win Best Picture and everything. I really liked Boyhood. I thought it was very good. I did not think it was great. I did not think it was a masterpiece. I think it is. I hate to call it a gimmick movie, but that is why we're talking about it because it was filmed over 12 years,
so
not because of that story.
Yeah. Do you think that the Academy looks at that because of the it is a gimmicky kind of move? I like it and appreciate it from a filmmaking standpoint. I think Linklater went out to tell that story, not as a gimmick. But I think the Academy looks at that and. Do you kind of think that the Academy is into some gimmick sometimes, and they go, "Oh, we're
I think it'll be nominated, and I think it has a chance to win, unlike some other movies. But at the same time, I don't think that it will.
Okay.
Hollywood. I mean, I guess the artist won, but it doesn't necessarily go for movies made outside the system that often.
I don't feel like this is a movie made outside the system. I mean, it's Richard Linklater who's worked with so many of the actors in Hollywood who they love.
Yeah, but he was just doing his own thing with IFC writing a check every year. I mean,
that's okay.
This was not...
I mean, that's fine. That's not going to bother people that it comes from IFC. I don't think.
I think IFC is going to be hard pressed to run as big a campaign as its competitors.
Well, they're not
the
ones who were literally running the campaign. They, you know, hired other people to do that, and
that's
it's going
true.
Really well. And they had the summer all to themselves, and honestly, most of the fall, because until Gone Girl, there wasn't another movie that people started talking about.
Let's go right there. Do you think Gone Girl is going to get a nom?
I actually do now.
Yeah,
I didn't think that at first.
I absolutely think
right.
so.
When I first saw it, I thought this is probably a little too. Chilly for the Academy,
yeah,
and not their usual thing. But again, so many other would-be contenders have faltered. That was a... We were talking earlier about, you know, a populist hit getting the Oscar conversation. I think it's going to be Gone Girl. It made so much money, which is a hard thing for the Academy to deny.
Yeah.
And not that that's the thing that sways them, but it's the thing that convinces them, oh, there was heft here.
Yeah, and especially for a movie like that.
The think pieces have still not stopped.
Right.
It has remained in the conversation. Yep. People want to talk about it.
Yep.
They want to see it. They want to talk about it. And it just has so much more of that than almost any other movie. I think it'll get
I completely agree. And there's a lot of goodwill in the industry, obviously, for Ben Affleck.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as this was approaching, that was one of the things. It's so funny with Schmoesno.com how I can drop Marvel, Star Wars, and they go batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can drop an image of Gone Girl and they go even more batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fincher is he is just somebody that everybody loves and they want and they root for him and they what's going on back there? I hear you.
Why the clock's not working either. I don't know how far we are into the show or how much time is left.
Yeah, that's right. So let's get back on track.
Imitation Game, though,
yes.
Okay? I felt like that is the inferior of the two British genius biopics or whatever, like clearly. I saw it in Toronto.
Including The Theory of Everything.
Right, along with the Stephen Hawking movie. I kind of thought it was phony. I thought it was an imitation of an Oscar contender. I saw right through it.
Okay.
And I can't believe that someone like Benedict Cumberbatch is getting Oscar buzz over someone like Jake Gyllenhaal.
See, there are movies like that I think are like Academy bait. Are you calling this Academy bait?
It is.
Like,
I thought
Crash
bait.
Was Academy bait, and I hated Crash.
Yeah, I love Crash, and I'll defend it to the death.
Oh, boy.
I think Crash only looks like Academy bait in retrospect.
Yeah.
A March ensemble movie about race that was really shot outside the system that cost that little is not what usually wins Best Picture.
Yeah.
In the case of The Imitation Game, I agree that I sort of thought The Theory of Everything, which is out this week, is a little bit more emotional and able to engage the audience. So I think it could be a sleeper. I think the real sleeper threat, though, there is that Eddie Redmayne could win Best
could
Actor.
Win. Yeah.
Over Benedict Cumberbatch. All the men who were nominated or thought to be let me not get ahead of myself. All the men who are sort of thought to be locked to get nominated, we've got Michael Keaton, we've got Steve Carell, we have why am I forgetting like 8,000 people?
Miles Teller?
No, not for Best Actor. I mean I would love
that. You
think
that Oscar's in the conversation last night?
For A Most Violent Year?
Yeah.
I think Jessica Chastain for Supporting Actress. But wait, so for Best Actor, there just are a whole lot of people like Benedict Cumberbatch in Imitation Game. There's a lot of sort of chilly presences. Not that the actors are. They're wonderful. But the characters are hard to warm up to. Mm-hmm. And Eddie Redmayne in playing Stephen Hawking in Theory of Everything, it's an immensely sympathetic performance. He's a wonderful person. I think that it kind of stands out by contrast in that category and could build momentum.
Interesting. As great as I thought that he was, it really, the movie belonged to Felicity Jones, I thought, and I thought she was wonderful.
She's great, and I'm glad that she will almost certainly get nominated for Best Actress.
All right, guys. Well, what about Interstellar? Is that in the conversation?
Ooh, here we go.
Yep.
I was harsh on its Oscar chances after seeing it.
Yeah, a lot of people are.
You know, like I keep saying, there are a lot of would-be Oscar contenders that couldn't go the distance that we keep seeing. And so after a lot of those had faded from view, before we'd seen Interstellar, you know, we were all thinking, well, this could easily just sort of clear the decks.
Yes.
And then it came out or it started screening for press. And I just think it's not going to be an easy sell to the Academy. It's a little too user unfriendly for them, you know, and the reviews are too mixed. There seems to be a backlash to Chris Nolan in the air. That's real. I think if he couldn't score a Best Director nod for Inception, which is to my mind a better movie also, you know, one that the Academy did nominate for Best Picture, I don't think he'll get a Best Director nod for Interstellar, which isn't as good and is on the Best Picture bubble.
Okay. Can we talk about that backlash real quick?
Yeah.
I know you tweeted some stuff last night where it sounds like you've been hearing some things.
Well, you know, so the backlash seemed to crystallize this week when the New York Times wrote an article about how Chris Nolan was interfering with Jessica Chastain's Oscar campaign for A Most Violent Year, a much smaller movie. but he had booked her in her contract and said, you can't do any award season campaigning for any movie but Interstellar, which has a smaller role.
That was through early December, right?
Yeah, through early December, essentially until A Most Violent Year comes out, which is at the very end of the year. But that said, like, you know, it's going to be screening. It just screened last night at AFI Fest. It'll keep screening for Golden Globes and do Q&As for SAG and all that. And they wanted her there, and she delivers a great performance in A Most Violent Year. So the particulars of that contract coming out, they make Nolan look bad. It's a black eye. And honestly, I've been hearing rumors that I should note, rival publicists eagerly trade in of sort of unusual contract demands.
So it really is like the Oscar whisper sort of game.
Yeah, but the interesting thing here is that I noticed a lot of people thought, oh, this must be the Most Violent Year team that's pushing this rumor, and it's not, as far as I can tell. I think there are other vested parties, or parties that don't have the vested interest of we're one of the two. We're not Interstellar. We're not Most Violent Year.
It's Harvey, isn't it? Just give it up.
I know.
No, it's not Harvey.
It's always Harvey.
It's not Harvey, although I'm sure Harvey's cool with it. But yeah, those rumors have been going around. And I should note, like I did on Twitter, like, you know, the rumors of what Nolan was asking for, which is sort of a wide berth from both the studio in their schedule. He didn't want all these movies in the way of Interstellar, which, you know, you can understand to some degree.
Sure.
He didn't want his actors' attention split. Like, that's that's a demand that makes sense on the face of it. But it feels like an overreach and can be treated as such by Hollywood because so few directors are in the position to even make those demands and get them. So it can seem like, how dare this dude micromanage and overreach to this degree, and that's how it's being spun by rival publicists.
Interesting. Wow. Well, at least you are veteran enough to recognize it as spin.
Oh, I think it's obviously spin. I mean, I literally have gotten calls from Oscar publicists this month being like, don't know if you can do anything with this, but have you heard this about Chris Nolan? And I think they eventually called Brooks Barnes at the New York Times.
I was really surprised it was the New York Times.
I was not surprised.
Well, okay. I want to know then your guys, because we got to wrap it up pretty soon, but let's go for the two of you, because you've actually seen more movies than I have this week. I've just been a little behind on things, but your picks for Best Picture as of now. Like, if you could pick your...
What was my favorite?
Well, I want to get maybe your favorites and your picks, but also what you think the Academy will nominate.
Well,
it's a big question. It's a loaded question.
I think the frontrunners to be nominated, at the very least, are, like we said, Boyhood and Imitation Game. I think The Theory of Everything will get nominated.
Yeah. Yep.
Birdman will. Yep. It's a little too weird for the Academy to actually give Best Picture to. And then after that, it gets interesting. Then you're like, well, will Foxcatcher take hold? I think it will and get in.
Whiplash?
Whiplash has really come on strong.
Yeah, it has.
The box office could be better. That concerns me. Everyone who's seen Whiplash loves it.
Classics
it's great.
Is leaving something on the table with that. I think that they have too many movies out or something.
I don't know. I mean, J.K. Simmons, I think, will win Best Supporting Actor because it's such a great performance.
So I think so, too.
But the fact that people aren't seeing it the way, or people aren't running out to see it, makes me wonder if voters will be like as eager to pop that disc in. You know, that's the only thing that gives me a little pause with Whiplash. But it's so good, and it's really defied a lot of odds. It's won, Best Picture laurels from a lot of film festivals.
Yep.
So I think that could be a sleeper Best Picture nominee. And I think Damien Chazelle, I think he's 29-year-old director who made that, could be a sleeper Best Director nominee.
Interesting.
Sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've had Ben Zeitlin, you've had Spike Jones who are around that age and were treated as the same sort of wunderkind, and it could be him.
That's great.
I would be thrilled if Whiplash got in.
And I think Unbroken and Sniper and Selma will get in. So that's like 8 or 9 right there. And there's never 10.
It seems that it's always going to be 9.
Yeah.
To the extent that I just feel like I wish they go back to 10. It's a round number. It's ridiculous that we're just going to have all these 9-year nominees.
What about something?
Or 9 nominee years.
Right.
Nightcrawler. Is that more of Jake Gyllenhaal?
I wish.
Yeah.
That's a nothing as far as the Academy is concerned because it's too genre. It's too much like Drive, another movie that was sort of touted as maybe the Academy would go for this, and they wouldn't even nominate Albert Brooks, which was an easy one.
Yeah.
I think Gyllenhaal's amazing in it.
But I think Russo gets in.
I would love that. Listen, this is a year where the Best Supporting Actress category is pretty thin, to my mind. So the fact that we aren't talking more about Rene Russo in that movie or Tilda Swinton in Snowpiercer.
Absolutely.
It's like, let's liven that sleepy category up. But the problem is that those movies are too genre for the Academy, and they're just not going to treat those like Oscar-caliber films for the most part.
You're probably right. I just hate that argument. That
no,
it's
I hate
genre.
That too.
But yeah, you're probably right.
Of recent vintage, the Academy in their performances have been nominating almost exclusively from the movies that get nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if, you know, Snowpiercer and Nightcrawler don't have a shot at Best Picture, and they don't, sadly, although they're two of my favorite movies of the year, it makes it harder for Rene Russo and Tilda Swinton to get seen for their performances, and harder to be taken seriously and viewed in an Oscar context.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what happens with Sienna Miller in American Sniper.
We'll
actually
see. She has a big presence in that trailer. Yeah. She has got more screen time in that trailer than she has in the entirety of Foxcatcher.
Right. Are there any like below the line noms that you'd love to see? Like, I mean, I don't think that it'll happen, but Bradford Young's cinematography with Most Violent Year last night was beautiful.
I mean, it depends on how many people see it.
It's a great looking film.
Yeah. But Bradford Young will definitely be nominated at some point. He's one of our most exciting DPs.
Point, yes.
And it could happen for Selma, which he's still working on, and which has Best Picture heat. But yeah, he's beautiful. We should all dream to be shot by Bradford Young someday. but you know, the interesting ones in cinematography are Emmanuel Lubezki for Birdman, because it's shot in these simulated long takes. So he could
Nightcrawler
back,
looked
he
amazing
back to back. It did.
Bob Elswit,
it did. And then Roger Deakins,
of course,
you know, the Susan Lucci of the Oscars, who's been nominated a zillion times, shot most of the Coen brothers films and has never won, which is crazy. Unbroken looks gorgeous, so this could be the year, but I say that about his work every year.
Anything on original score? I'm a big score guy.
Me too.
What are my favorite scores of the year? Well, you know, actually, we just saw this film, The Most Violent Year, last night, and Alex Ebert, who did All Is Lost and won the Golden Globe.
That was a great score.
You may remember his Man Bun. that was it was a really beautiful score. I would love if he could get in again. I'd love to listen to that score again.
I liked Gone Girl's score. Do you think that has a chance?
I think very much so. Yeah. They've won in that category before. So,
I gotta catch up on my movies, and I think we gotta wrap it up. But we wanted to do
real
one
quick
thing.
Real quick, just we'll do thumbs up, thumbs down. Michael Fassbender is Steve Jobs. Yay or
I'm
nay?
Into that idea.
I'm totally into that.
I like it.
I totally like it. If Bale dropped out, I loved Bale as Jobs, but
I'm going to start a rumor right now real quickly.
Do it.
I heard Steve Jobs' widow was calling actors saying, don't take this role.
Really?
That played a part in maybe why Christian Bale passed.
Interesting.
I have not confirmed that, clear.
Yeah.
And I would have tried to confirm it and write that story if Fassbender had not been cast yet, you know, if it was still an open role.
Well, is he cast? Is it?
No,
I mean,
he's not cast.
No, he's in talks.
He did get cast, I'd give it 2 weeks just to make sure it stuck.
Yeah,
sure,
I know,
sure.
Because we've had a lot of rumored names. But.
And then Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight. Guys, are we happy? Channing Tatum.
I'm happy.
All that good stuff.
Yeah,
Demian Bashir.
Yeah, I like Channing Tatum, and I'm so interested to see him go into a Tarantino movie.
I don't think he's going to have a big role.
I can't get excited about this movie.
I think
it feels
with his...
so been there, done that for Tarantino, but I'm happy to be proven wrong.
Well, I
but
think
just
because
reading
we
about all of it, I'm kind of
with you, and he's my favorite, by the way.
I'm not excited.
Well, see, I like the idea that we're going to see Channing Tatum go to Hail Caesar with the Coen brothers.
Sure. Yep.
And that's an interesting
also with Channing Tatum.
Yep, and so with Channing Tatum doing that, and now Hateful Eight, I think the sky's getting ready.
Sky's the limit.
Well, listen, those are smaller roles, though. Sure. He's so amazing in Foxcatcher. Speaking about best actor heat, that movie could get a lot of Oscar nominations, and I fear that he'll be left out of best actor, even though for my money, it's the best performance in the movie.
There you go.
Nope.
All right,
it's Ruffalo. It's Ruffalo.
Well, listen, they're all three great performances.
They're all amazing. But
it's an embarrassment of riches.
Steve Carell and Tatum are getting all the notice. Like Ruffalo's getting lost in the
shuffle
because
it's not going to get nominated.
It's not a transformative performance the way the other two are.
Ruffalo will get nominated for best supporting actor. He's the easiest one to relate to for the audience.
Ruffalo.
He's really good. He'll
and
get
you know
it.
What? You know what I'll say about Ruffalo? I finally caught Begin Again. He was awesome in that movie. I wish he could be nominated for that. I thought that was one of the best performances I've seen from him.
Nominate everything.
Let's just nominate everything. Like 10 nominees.
We could talk about this
category.
Stuff all day. We should get going, though.
Yes, we could. And we are going to leave you guys. We want to thank Kyle Buchanan from Vulture.com for coming on. Where can the kids find you out there in Schmoville?
They can find me at Vulture.com or, I guess, on Twitter if you're into that, at Kyle Buchanan.
Yeah, there you go. Schmoville, give him a nice warm welcome. We have a great fan base.
A welcome, a goodbye, whatever.
No. You're going to be now a part of Schmoville.
I felt stupid today. You sounded really smart.
You were really smart.
I don't know half this stuff.
I don't either. I was just quiet and just went.
Yeah. I'm like listening like a fan. I forgot. You're co-hosting the show right now.
I know. It was amazing. That awards talk. I mean, you know your stuff, man. That's what I love. And I guarantee this Best Picture landscape. Actors, supporting actresses, it's going to be changing every day as more movies come out. I don't know if there's anything else coming out.
Stay tuned to Vulture for all your award season coverage.
Absolutely.
And
stay tuned to therap.com. Right, Jeff?
I may have some interesting stuff one day, soon.
I think you will, and where can they find you, as always?
At The Insnyder on Twitter.
That's right. And, guys, you can find me at Riley Around on Twitter and at Schmozno.com. And, as always, guys, please go to iTunes and subscribe, rate, comment, share with your friends, tell your mother, tell your father, tell your dog, because dogs are smart. So thank you again for tuning in to Meet the Movie Press. It's been a great episode.
The Force Awakens.
The Force has awoken.
You just met the Movie Press. Have a good weekend.
See you next week.
From producers Christian Harloff, Mark Ellis, and the entire Schmoes No Network crew, we would like to thank you for listening to Meet the Movie Press. Special thanks to Kevin Undergaro and Maria Menounos, the author of Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, in stores now. To watch or listen to other Schmoes No Network episodes, get movie news, or join the conversation, be sure to visit schmoesno.com. I'm the Pit Boss, and this has been a presentation of Schmoes No Network.